So, Ron, I guess let's just start, you know, with you, your history. Obviously, you've been in the, I guess I'll call it the business, you know, for quite a long time. And, you know, with your position with All-Star over the years, how long have you been, you know, responding to emergencies in our area?
I started in 1975 with the Celeron Fire Department. And then about a year and a half later, I took the EMT course.
The fight on drugs and overdoses is, it's not a new problem.
No, not at all.
But it's becoming what? Well, how would you say that now? Is it becoming more widespread? Is it because it becoming more public? Or is it just easier now for people to get their hands on bad stuff?
It's easy for people to get their hands on bad stuff. Back in the day, we would get heroin overdoses, but nowhere's in the numbers that we're seeing nowadays. And then it waned for a while, because I think the cost of heroin was going up. Now it's apparently very, very cheap and easy to get. And, of course, now it's mixed with other chemicals like fentanyl.
And so what type of training is EMS? I mean, are you being responded on? Has the training changed over the last, let's say, handful of years because of the type of drugs that are you guys are encountering now?
Absolutely, because prior to the last several years, basic EMTs could not give Narcan. That was reserved for advanced level people like a paramedic. We now train EMTs to give nasal Narcan. And so that's making a big impact, too.
Your EMSs are coming up on the scene, not of an accident, but of an overdose. Can you take me through the ABCs of what that procedure is like for them?
Okay. Well, for us as responders, we'll get the call from 911 more often than not. And EMS, Emergency Medical Services, will respond with usually the fire department, if we're talking the city of Jamestown, and with the police department. Scenes of overdoses quite often are not safe scenes. So we require that the law enforcement go in and make sure the scene is safe for us. Mm. A lot of these people, they'll have guns, they'll have knives laying around, they'll have all the drug paraphernalia, needles and things like that. And if we start to wake somebody up and they start grabbing things, we need law enforcement there. So that's how we start. Well, all three entities, fire, EMS, and law enforcement, go to an overdose.
Wow. And in an overdose situation where time is crucial, I mean, for the family members or for the friends who are on scene, I mean, sometimes I have to imagine whoever gets there first, I mean, they're pretty emotional saying, you know, help them. And you guys, you've got to wait.
Absolutely. But the nice thing is law enforcement can also give Narcan. So if we stage a block away or so, and then we get the call to go in, sometimes they are already giving Narcan before we get there to help start things. And again, Narcan doesn't work in seconds. It takes several minutes for it to take effect. And again, with the potency of the heroin and fentanyls that we're seeing nowadays, quite often these patients are requiring more than one dose.
Wow.
More than one dose. And we actually now give double the dose of what we used to give years ago. We used to give, it's called 2 milligrams. Now we're giving 4.
Why is that?
Because of the potency of the stuff that we're seeing out there.
Wow.
And it's a less volume, too. Mm-hmm. When we used to give it, we'd give 1 milliliter in each nostril, and sometimes it would drip out. Nowadays, it's like 0.1 milliliters, so it's a very small amount of fluid. And just so you can see it, I know our listeners can't see it.
Sure.
But this is what we're giving nowadays.
Oh, wow.
It's very, very small. It's a little
plunger
device. So
it looks like an inhaler for allergies or anything else?
Yes, except smaller. And so we make push half in one nostril and half in the other. Wow. And then we have to bag them. We have to breathe for them. These people quite often are not breathing. Hopefully they still have a pulse. Mm-hmm. So we'll start to breathe for them, get the Narcan out, spray the Narcan in their nostrils, and then start bagging them, you know, breathing for them again until hopefully it kicks in after about 3 or 4 minutes. If we're not getting a response, then we give them another dose.
How often would you say you're going to the same houses, the same areas, the same families, the same individuals? How often are your EMS personnel, are they getting repeats?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we have our regulars, we call them. Yep.
And then
sometimes we get multiple in one time, in one place. Mm. Yesterday, we had two individuals overdose in the same residence. Mm. So we had sent a couple of ambulances and gave the one subject, we gave a couple doses of Narcan to. The other one didn't require any. But we're seeing cases of where we have multiple people overdosing at the same time. So they got a bad batch.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you have firsthand experience in saying, listen, you know, this is preventative. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be this way. And there's so much emotion that your, you know, personnel has had to respond to. I mean, exactly. I don't know how you guys sleep at night sometimes.
Sometimes it's difficult. Our crews see a lot. You know, yesterday, I think we had four altogether, two in the one place and then two others. So we see it a lot. We're tuned into it. We have the Narcan right at the top of our bag so we can grab it quickly because we're seeing so many calls. And just to give you a quick idea of some numbers, just from January 1st of this year until today, we've had 127 overdose calls that All Star. Not all of those are heroin or fentanyl. There are a few methamphetamines and there's a few over-the-counter things, but the vast majority are heroin and fentanyl. Out of those, All Star gave Narcan 40 times.
Wow.
So sometimes police gave it before we got there. Sometimes fire gave it before we got there. Excuse me. The same time frame in 2020, we had 68. So we've almost doubled the number of overdose calls we've gotten just in the first part of this year. And back in 2020, we gave Narcan 27 times. So almost doubled again.
When you guys are arriving on a scene and you revive someone and they're conscious, I mean, do you ever have the conversation? I don't know if it's really a conversation, but maybe it's more of a observance of them kind of kicking themselves and saying, why do I continue to do this? Is there any type of remorse?
Very seldom that I'm hearing. quite often people will deny it, even though the drug paraphernalia is sitting there. No, I don't do drugs. You know, I just passed out, you know, no mm-hmm. big deal. But then the bystanders will tell you. And then sometimes the bystanders take off. They'll call 911 and leave because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, and right now they don't.
Right.
So we see a lot of different things. The one thing that bothers me is we're seeing a lot of these people that go unresponsive and they're barely breathing or not breathing at all. And our criteria is if they're breathing less than 10 times a minute, we consider them not breathing. We take over breathing for them. But a lot of these people are doused with ice cold water. Because the bystanders are trying to revive them using ice cold water, and they won't do anything. In fact, it may hurt things because if they're breathing four or five times a minute and they've got their face covered in water, they could aspirate and pull that stuff into their lungs.
So you guys are firsthand seeing that this is
Absolutely.
A common. Is this because it's something that they've seen on YouTube or they've read on? Where did they get that type of idea?
They're just struggling. We got to do something until the ambulance gets there. And of course, with the time inflation issues. You know, they call and they expect the ambulance to be there in 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen because it's got to be dispatched. The crews have to respond. It takes, you know, we have about a 3.5 minute response time in the city. Mm-hmm. To them, it seems like it's been 15 minutes, you know. And then we do see a lot of bystanders that are giving Narcan before we get there, too. But because of that time inflation, we've only been on the road, been there. You know, took 3 minutes to get there, and they've already given four doses.
Wow!
Because they're not allowing the time for it to work, so they think it's not working. I got to give them more.
So can they? forgive me if I, you know, because again, Joe Schmo, don't know. Can they overdose on Narcan? Can you give too much? You know, Narcan.
No, you cannot.
Okay.
You and I could take Narcan and it wouldn't do a thing to us right now.
There'd be no side effects.
No side effects. Absolutely nothing. All it is, it's a narcotic antagonist that binds the receptors in the brain and keeps the heroin and fentanyl receptors from attaching. The problem is, depending upon, you know, the strength of the batch they got, if we give them Narcan and they wake up and they absolutely refuse to go to the hospital and there's no other way that we can force them to go, they could relapse because the Narcan does have a half-life.
Oh, okay.
So if they took a really bad, big dose, an hour later they could go back unresponsive again. So we really push to transport these people. On top of that, they get social services referrals once they get to the hospital. Mm-hmm. We're also doing a thing in conjunction with the Chautauqua County Department of Health, Mental Health Association, and the Southern Tier Healthcare System. We have a program called OD MAP. So when my crews has an overdose, I go into this program and enter the overdose, not the names and stuff, but you know the location, how much Narcan we gave, the patient age, and were they transported to the hospital or not. We're developing statistics so that, you know, down the road, Mental Health Association or the county could maybe apply for grants mm-hmm. to go out into the target communities where we're seeing a lot of these in clusters because we put the addresses in mm-hmm. and it all pops up on a map. So if we're seeing we've got a bunch on the northwest side of the city, hopefully they can get grants and go out and do some community service out there.
So if somebody's listening right now and if they're not a user but they're a friend or family member and they start hearing you saying how I'm plugging in addresses to a system, and maybe the little hairs on the back of their neck start standing up and going, oh, they think I'm a target. They know it's me. How does that relate to the law?
We don't. There's no names, and I cannot release information due to HIPAA. This is different. So when I enter an overdose, the county health department sees it. They refer it to the Mental Health Association. Between those two entities, they contact the Jamestown Police Department, who can release other things that I cannot. Mm-hmm. Then they go out and send peer counselors out in the city. That's where we're doing it right now, eventually, hopefully, in the county. And they will provide services. They'll have a bag with, you know, referrals and things what to do, and they'll do follow-ups down the road. So we have a whole algorithm that we've had multiple meetings where we're trying to target these people and give them some help.
So what you're saying and what I'm hearing is if somebody overdoses, whether it be for the first time or, you know, the 10th time, somebody is going to be there on their doorstep or in their area to help them, not to make them feel any less of themselves, not to, you know, arrest them and take them away, you know, if they're just using and they're not distributing. I mean, you guys are using this information because the statistics are staggering. It's gone beyond the point now of just kind of sitting back and hoping it fixes itself.
Correct.
This campaign, we're taking the proactive approach to get the information in front of these individuals.
Absolutely correct. And they're sending peer counselors, people who have been that in that boat in the past, so they can relate to these patients.
Mm-hmm. As silly as it might sound to some people is not, you know, do drugs with a buddy, you know, but have somebody there. I mean, have them aware so they can call 911. You know, they can, you know, revive, use the Narcan. And, you know, like, again, you know, for some people that might sound, you know, kind of absurd. But realistically, if the goal is to, you know, prevent people from dying, which right now is the number one point of this new campaign, it's okay to do that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the whole targeted thing is something we're really trying to go for, you know, and it's an illness. It's there's a lot of bad stigma out there about people that overdose and drug abuse and all that. But as you mentioned, it's an addiction and it's an illness. And these people need help. And sometimes they don't take the help. Sometimes we'll transport them to the hospital. We'll put them over into the hospital ER bed and we'll start walking down the hall with our stretcher. And then they get up and run out of the ER, you know, so they're not getting services.
Right.
And the ER doesn't have any ability to force them to stay.
Right.
You know, so we try to help people. Some people, you know, it's like AAA or AA, you know, you have to admit you have a problem.
Sure.
You know, type of thing.
And, you know, bringing you in, you know, and talking about the first responders, you know, we're in this campaign, we're bringing a bunch of people together from different aspects of this, you know, combat addiction. The first responders, how do they deal? I mean, how do you guys do? Like I said, you know, earlier, it was kind of, you know, tongue in cheek, but, you know, how do you sleep at night? But sometimes, I mean, how do the first responders of any, you know, accident, any, you know, whether it be motor vehicle, you know, drugs, fire. I mean, how do you guys cope with all this?
Well, it's difficult. There's no doubt there's a lot of PTSD in our ranks, you know. But when it comes to, like, overdoses and you bring somebody back, you know, even with, though it's Narcan, but you're still breathing for them for a while and that sort of thing, you have that sense of satisfaction they did the right thing. And it's the same with car accident. You get pull somebody out and, you know, stabilize a fracture, make sure they're not bleeding to death, that sort of thing. There is that satisfaction that goes with that. But we see things in emergency medical services and the fire service that no human being should actually see. Unfortunately, that's part of the job. And it's an acquired thing. We talk about it. We teach critical incident stress to our providers. A lot of them they're adrenaline junkies. They're, oh, I'm too tough. I don't need that. I'm fine. But that stress is cumulative. And, you know, years down the road, they could really start having issues. And we try to address that.
What would be the process, the ABCs of them coming across somebody that they feel may have overdosed on anything?
Right. Well, one of the key factors for a heroin or fentanyl overdose or a narcotic overdose as opposed to a methamphetamine or something, they'll turn blue because it's interfering with their respiratory center in their brain. The lips, fingernails, everything turn blue. They're barely breathing. That's what you look for. But the other thing is they get pinpoint pupils, where ours are like 3 to 4 millimeters right now. Mm-hmm. Theirs are so small, you can barely see them. And that's how we originally used to diagnose a heroin overdose out back in the day. You know, we'd go to an unresponsive person, barely breathing and thinking, well, maybe they have a seizure or maybe they have a heart attack or something. And then we look at their pupils and it's like, oh, get out the Narcan, you know, because that's the other big telltale sign.
And then I would think, you know, 911.
Absolutely. Right. Scene safety is first. We teach, drum that into our EMS people too, which is why the police go in first in most cases. So if you come across somebody, I had one last night at the corner of Washington and 17th, you know, laying in the corner, on the corner. When you walk up, you know, look, survey the scene, make sure there's nothing harmful there, that they're going to grab something if they all of a sudden come to, because maybe it's not a heroin overdose, maybe it's their alcoholic that passed out.
Mm-hmm.
Think about your own scene safety. If you have the Narcan with you and they have pinpoint pupils and they're getting that bluish color, go ahead and give the Narcan. It's very simple. It's just, anybody can do it. You just put half of a plunger in one nostril, half a plunger in the other one.
So some people might say, well, you know, to administer a life-saving drug, it sounds scary, but I mean, the training is out there for people to do it, and it really becomes, you know, pretty much just right. Routine.
We don't just hand, I'm not involved with the, you know, procurement of that, but we don't just hand out Narcan kits and say, go on your way. They tell you how to use it. They tell you got to wait a few minutes. You know, don't be given tons of doses, even though with time inflation it happens. And it's a very simple procedure. Very simple.
If you could tell somebody, you know, if you were sitting across from somebody right now who was thinking about doing drugs for the first time right now, today, this week, what would the warning be?
I tell them, my experience says, don't do that. Heroin is and fentanyl are incredibly addicting. And a lot of people are addicted after the first time because they get that big flash and that sense of euphoria. And then what we're hearing is that subsequent doses, it only lasts for like 15 seconds. And so they keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, which is a shame.
15 seconds of a high, basically.
Exactly. That's what we're hearing.
And it could kill you.
Yes, absolutely. And it's been killing a lot of people around here this year.